the Book of Judges. It's a tale of chaos unleashed, of violence unchained, and of a moral compass spinning wildly out of control. Ancient Israel's story? Perhaps. But as we peel back the pages, we'll find a mirror reflecting our own tumultuous times. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Well, join us over the next few weeks as we study the Book of Judges, ancient wisdom for modern chaos. Our story begins now. Judges, chapter 12, verses 1 to 7.
The Ephraimite forces were called out, and they crossed over to Zaphon. They said to Jephthah, "Why did you go to fight the Ammonites without calling us to go with you? We're going to burn down your house over your head." Jephthah answered, "I and my people were engaged in a great struggle with the Ammonites. Although I called, you didn't save me out of their hands. When I saw that you wouldn't help, I took my life in my hands and crossed over to fight the Ammonites. And the Lord gave me the victory over them. Now why have you come up today to fight against me?" Jephthah then called together the men of Gilead and fought against Ephraim. The Gileadites struck them down because the Ephraimites had said, "You Gileadites are renegades from Ephraim and Manasseh." The Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan leading to Ephraim. And whenever a survivor of Ephraim said, "Let me cross over," the men of Gilead asked him, "Are you an Ephraimite?" If he replied, "No," they said, "All right, say Shibboleth." If he said Sibboleth, because he could not pronounce the word correctly, they seized him and killed him at the fords of the Jordan. 42,000 Ephraimites were killed at that time. Jephthah led Israel for 6 years. Then Jephthah the Gileadite died and was buried in a town in Gilead. Just imagine for a moment, just imagine being asked to pronounce a word. But just imagine, just one word. Get it right, you live. Get it wrong, you die. Now this is far more serious, isn't it, than a matter of pronunciation. It's not like some people north of Watford Gap say grass rather than saying it properly. I mean, this is life or death, isn't it? In Judges chapter 12, a single word, Shibboleth, becomes the dividing line between life and death, between brother and enemy. And that shouldn't surprise us, should it? Because as we've gone over these past 2 weeks, we've been watching words destroy. And today we see just how far that destruction goes. Just a flashback, chapter 10 of Judges. Israel were offering empty, deceptive words to God. Hollow promises that they never meant to keep. And then last week in Judges chapter 11, we saw Jephthah's deadly words, which led to his daughter's death. And where you might have hoped that the lesson had been learnt, we discover something even worse. An entire tribe using words as weapons, and the destruction is devastating. So the tribe of Ephraim, they cross over the Jordan River, not to fight enemies, but to fight their own brothers. And at the heart of the tragedy, well, you guessed it, words. Words that serve pride rather than words that serve God. Words that become deadly as any sword. And it's the pattern we keep seeing in Judges. God's people compromising bit by bit. First it's their worship, then it's their relationships, and now it's their words, becoming tools for their own glory rather than God's. And this isn't only ancient history, is it? Every day we face the same choice. Will our words serve God, or will our words serve me? Will our words build up God's people, or will our words tear them down? Like Israel, we can find ourselves compromising, not in an obvious way at first, but in how we speak, who we speak against, who our words glory the most. So this evening we're thinking about this. Where do idolatrous words lead? Idolatrous there being self-serving. Idolatrous there being not worshipping God. Where do those words lead? And the answer matters more than we might think at first. Let's have a look at how these idolatrous words lead God's people down a path of destruction and what that means for us today. So where do idolatrous words lead? Well, they lead to brother against brother and lead ultimately to death. So we start our passage this evening with Jephthah having fought for Israel. And we end with him dead and buried somewhere in Gilead. And with him, 42,000 others dead as well. 42,000. Now, if you're anything like me, if I hear one person dead, I can imagine, I can feel that. 42,000, I struggle to really capture in my mind. I don't know if you're the same. 42,000, I mean, that's not just a number. That is 42,000 sons. 42,000 brothers, perhaps. 42,000 husbands, fathers, friends. All because of words that should have united God's people, becoming weapons that divided them. That's where idolatrous words lead. That is where self-serving words lead. They lead to destruction. They lead to a loss of inheritance, and they turn brother against brother, leading to death. And see how that works. So where did the destructive words come from? Well, the heart of the issue is self-glory. Idolatrous words come from self-glory. That's verses 1 to 3 of our passage this evening. And if we thought self-centeredness was only an issue for Jephthah, well, wait till you see these guys in chapter 12, verse 1. The Ephraimites. We've met them before in Judges. We've seen them at least twice. Last time we saw them was Judges chapter 8. And in Judges chapter 8, they had similar beef with Gideon. They said explicitly to Gideon, "You have not involved us in a battle." But Gideon appeases them. He compares their tribal size to the size of his clan. He sorts out the issue. Same thing happens again, Judges chapter 12. But now they come to Jephthah and they demand recognition. They're showing their pride again. So what do? They cross over the Zaphon and they confront Jephthah. And they say, verse 1, "Why did you go to fight the Ammonites without calling us to go with you? We're going to burn down your house over your head." Well, that escalated quickly, didn't it? The language of crossing over, it's the same word that's been echoing all the way through this account of Jephthah, all the way through chapter 10. In fact, it's exactly what the bad guys did in chapter 10 against Jephthah, or in chapter 11. But notice now, it's Israel crossing over to attack, well, Israel. And they're threatening to burn down his house over his head, aren't they? And that's ironic. When we remember what happened in the last chapter, the word house in Hebrew, it can mean family home or it can mean family itself. It can point to inheritance and a future, which is exactly what Jephthah's already lost, isn't it? Well, Jephthah, man of words, he answers verses 2 and 3, and his response to the Ephraimites is almost a replay of Gideon's approach back in chapter 8. But while Gideon humbled himself and he found a way to appease, well, Jephthah is still talking about himself. He's still focused on his own glory. He sees his leadership, his victory, as something to do with him. Have a look down at verse 2. Just listen out for the I and the my as we go through. Jephthah answered, "I and my people were engaged in a great struggle with the Ammonites, and although I called, you didn't save me out of their hands. When I saw that you wouldn't help, I took my life in my hands and crossed over to fight the Ammonites. And the Lord gave me victory over them. Now, why have you come up today to fight against me?" Did you hear it? So that's the problem with idolatry. It's all about me. We might dress it up differently, but at its heart, idolatry is when I put myself in God's place. And here's the thing. When everyone decides that it's me who's in charge, you have 8 billion competitors for that throne. It's going to get ugly. Well, instead of being glad of the assist, Ephraim's pride is hurt. Do you see that? And that's shown all the more because of what Jephthah says right in the middle of verse 3. Did you see what he said? The Lord gave me victory over them. Now, whatever we think of Jephthah's understanding of what he's just said there, we're meant to be focusing on what Ephraim thinks. And what do they think? Well, they don't seem to care. Their pride is hurt. That is what matters most. And they are out for blood. Who cares what God was doing here? This is a personal thing. In their priorities, getting what they want is what matters. And that is what Israel's been doing through this section, isn't it? Back in Judges 10, verse 15, what did Israel say? Do with us whatever you think best, but please rescue us now. Or let's put the emphasis, do whatever, just do what we want now. Idolatrous words. Words that reject God. And they get us nowhere. And don't we wish that was just an issue for ancient Israel? I mean, we saw it, didn't we, as we worked through 1 Corinthians last year. Paul warned about division in the church, where people were more concerned about puffing themselves up by saying who they followed. Do you remember? I follow Paul, I follow Apollos, I follow Cephas. And they were rejecting the true gospel in doing that. It's a matter for them then, for the Corinthians too, and it's a matter for us as well. So let me ask you, point blank, do you ever use your words to divide? Do you ever use your words to build your own empire? Do you ever use your words to protect your image? Do we get into fights, into arguments, for the sake of proving that we're right? Or for the sake of God's glory? Are we more concerned about our reputation or about God's reputation? See, when our words serve ourselves rather than God's purpose, when we're more concerned about our church being recognised than God's glory, well, we need to spot that early doors. We need to get back on the right path because, as you're about to see, the end is disastrous. So self-glory fuels idolatrous words. Well, let's move on to see how those words become not just personal, but tribal, how they divide God's people. That's what we see in verse 4. And the second point we see this evening is this. Idolatrous words, well, they put our group first. As you work through Jephthah's story, his bargaining gets worse and worse. He started, didn't he? He wanted to become the leader of Gilead, managed that. Then he tried to haggle with the king of Ammon, and the king of Ammon famously said, well, he didn't care. Then he tried to negotiate with God and ended up sacrificing his own daughter. And now, well, now the casualties only rise, don't they? His track record, his words are shoddy. Have a look down at verse 4. You see this text, it sits between crossings over. We get a few. We've got two in verses 1 to 3. We've got another load in verses 5 to 7. And it's as if the author wants us to see this is the line that is being crossed. Because it's not the debate of verses 1 to 3 that caused this issue. We're told explicitly what causes this fight. Have a look down verse 4. Jephthah then called together the men of Gilead and fought against Ephraim. The Gileadites struck them down because the Ephraimites had said, you Gileadites are renegades from Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, this might seem a bit like a petty insult, one that a sibling might use on another. But actually, there's something more serious, something far deeper going on here. You see, Gilead and Ephraim are, well, they're different types of groups. Gilead is a clan. It's a family group. Ephraim, well, Ephraim's a tribe. It's a tribe that's been designated by God, given an inheritance, a land. Think of it like this. God gave the land to the tribes of Israel. The tribes then are formed of clans. So when Ephraim here calls Gilead renegades or fugitives or survivors, they're not just insulting them, they're trying to cut them out of God's people. Exodus chapter 20, We often call it the Ten Commandments. It's more literally the Ten Words. Just as God spoke 10 times to create the world, he spoke 10 times at Sinai, Mount Sinai, to create a people. God's words created a people. It's one of the big things in the Pentateuch. But just have a look what's happening here. Israel, they are rejecting God's words. They're rejecting God's covenant. And so what happens is as they reject God's word, they start to break apart what God has joined together. Ephraim distanced themselves from Gilead, and Gilead accepts that divide. They are fracturing the very nation that God formed with his words. And as God's people walk away from God's words, they're walking into destruction. And again, words still do that today, don't they? There are legitimate reasons for churches to split. If a church departs from the faith, there are good reasons to mark and avoid that church. But let's be honest for a moment. Most church fights are not over spiritual things, are they? Just like Ephraim and Gilead here, they're over worldly things. Over style, perhaps. Over translations, maybe. Brothers fall out over politics, maybe. Sisters divide over opinions, perhaps. God's people breaking themselves apart over worldly issues. And when issues like those become more important than our Christian identity, I can guarantee you it's because we've lost sight of God's word. We get lost in the moment, don't we? We get lost in the world, we forget God, and we compromise. Judges 12 is warning us against that, isn't it? Why? Because of where it all leads. Final thing this evening. Idolatrous words, well, they end in destruction. Verses 5 to 7. We saw where Jephthah's words ended up last week. They affected his inheritance, his house, his family. But now the words are even more destructive, aren't they? And we have another fight at the River Jordan. It's the same place that Ehud, back in Judges chapter 3, had routed the Moabites. But instead of the Moabites falling by sword, it's Israelite killing Israelites. Have a look down at verse 5. The Gileadites, they capture the fords of the Jordan and they start to enact a crossing test for any of the survivors. There's some bitter irony here. The word survivor there, same word as renegade in verse 4. The very insult that Ephraim has thrown at Gilead is now describing what's happened to them. And just notice. Notice how the Gileadites test them. It's an act of separation using words. Let's have a look at what they do. Verse 5. The Gileadites, they captured the fords of the Jordan leading to Ephraim. And whenever a survivor of Ephraim said, "Let me cross over," the men of Gilead answered him, "Are you an Ephraimite?" If he replied no, they said, "All right, say Shibboleth." If he said Sibboleth, because he could not pronounce the word correctly, they seized him and killed him at the falls of the Jordan. 42,000 Ephraimites were killed at that time. See the test? Do they say Sibboleth, or do they sound like Sean Connery and say Shibboleth? I mean, it's utterly ridiculous, isn't it? But what have they done? What have they done here? They have found something that divides them. They've racked their brains, not for what will unite them, but what will divide them. They've found out what makes them different, and they have capitalized on it. It's just like being back at the Tower of Babel. They are splintering apart quickly. It'd be like a Londoner, wouldn't it? Testing someone outside the M25, who's never been into London, on how they pronounce train stations. St. Pancras? Pancras? Marylebone? Marylebone? Which one is it? I mean, we laugh at those differences today, don't we? But imagine if those accents became, well, battle lines. Imagine if your pronunciation determined whether you were able to cross London Bridge or not. It's ridiculous. It's exactly what's happening here at the River Jordan. And it leads to 42,000. 42,000 Ephraimites dying. That is brutal. That will almost wipe that tribe out. I mean, we can lose the severity in the numbers. That is 41,999 more people than Jephthah's daughter last time. And again, still because of words. And that's where idolatrous speech leads. Because idols, they always lead you to death. If you are going to try and save yourself by yourself, it's a fool's errand. Idolatry like this always leads to death. Which is where the story ends, verse 7. Jephthah led Israel for 6 years. Then Jephthah the Gileadite died and was buried in the town of Gilead. We plan to come back next week to see how the author of Judges shows us all of Jephthah's legacy. It's one of the shorter accounts at the end of this are. Tola, Jer, Ibsen, Elon, Abdon. But notice what we're told in verse 7. He led Israel for 6 years. That's the shortest judge so far. He was buried. We actually don't know where. The NIV, it smooths it over a little bit too much. It says he was buried in a town in Gilead. I mean, that might sound more specific than it should. We're told literally he was buried in the towns of Gilead, somewhere in that vicinity. Nothing specific. And we lack anything about rest. All the way through Judges, the judges are given rest, but not here. Because as we said previously, there are now two enemies that need dealing with. The Ammonites and the Philistines. And the Philistines, well, they're still going. So where does Jephthah end? Well, he ends in death. Where does the product of Israel's idolatry lead? Well, it leads to death. Where do words apart from God lead? Death. They might sound shiny. They might sound impressive. They might even sound pious. But they all end the same. Death. So we began with our word shibboleth. The word that divided brothers, leading to 42,000 death. It's a word that tore God's people apart, isn't it? That's what happens when our words serve our glory instead of serving God's. When Israel remember who they are, God's covenant people, their words bring unity. As we go through the book of Acts, we're seeing the word of Jesus, the word of the gospel, does the opposite, doesn't it? It brings people back together. It unites people from Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria reunited, and the end of the earth brought in as well. So as we look at our words this week in our homes, on our phones, in our church, what do they reveal about who we give glory to? Are we creating our own shibboleth? Are we using our words to prove who's in and who's out? Are we acting like Ephraim? Are we more concerned about being recognised than God's glory? Are our words building up God's people? Or are our words building up our ego? Because our words, they always flow from our worship. When we worship ourselves, our words divide and destroy. Just as they did for Jephthah, just as they did for Ephraim. When we want to be number one, and we have to climb on top of 8 billion people to do so. But when we worship God, our words bring life. Our words bring unity. Our words bring grace. So the next time you catch yourself about to speak about another church, another Christian, or argue about something in God's family, just pause. Ask yourself, am I creating my own shibboleth here? And then think to yourself, what is it going to cost? Because words can turn brother against brother. And those words, they ultimately lead to death, to destruction. We want to be serving God's glory, not our own.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Any questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com. I'll see you again next time.